It's been an emotional and busy and very exciting ride for the last month and a half. My heart is still so full of images and friends from Africa. So I just want to kind of pick up there and tell you that we made our way to Africa via about a 24-hour journey. About 17 hours on one flight leg of our in an airplane. Got to know each other very, very well on that trip. But we got there and made our way to the encampment, the mission station there, and went about our work. And we were very excited. We were doing things that we were very familiar with. We were working with our hands. Some of these ladies were slinging a paintbrush until they got where they couldn't even hold that paintbrush in their hand. And I think some switched over to the offhand. But we were very comfortable there on the campus of the conference and training center because we were doing things we knew, things that we were familiar with. And then missionary Gary Seidel said, the pastor of the local church will be here on a certain day at a certain time. And he wants some of you, those of you who can, to kind of drop what you're doing and go on a prayer walk out in the village. And we said, okay, what's the prayer walk? We know what prayer is, but we didn't know exactly what they're going to do. He said, well, you just go out and you go from home to home in the village and you just ask them, is there anything we can pray with you about? And then you pray for them. And all of a sudden, things became very unfamiliar. We didn't know what to expect, and we didn't know how we'd do it. And, you know, there's a language barrier that we could have used as an excuse and so forth. But we went into the heart of Africa. And timidly at first, I was the pastor and I was the leader of the group, so naturally they called on me the first few times. And I want you to know, I was pretty intimidated, pretty uncomfortable. And I was later able to say to some of the other missionaries, you know, it's okay to be a little intimidated, a little frightened. It's okay if you stutter and stammer a little bit. It doesn't really matter. Because, number one, you're speaking through a translator, and they're just going to say what they think you ought to have said anyway. I preached to the local congregation that Sunday, and I have no idea what I preached because Pastor was over here, and man, I'd say something, and he'd get so animated and then go on and on. And I'm telling you, he talked longer than I did, so I knew he was embellishing it. Man, I wish I had him here today. But anyway, we went into the village, and it was just like you read the stories of Jesus going from village to village, and it was just like that. The homes that we visited, people were so excited, and often the women, particularly those that were affiliated with the church, would rush out and they would want to hug and kiss everyone. And to those of us whose hair is becoming a little silver, they would shake our hand and they'd curtsy to us in a show of respect. But then the most exciting thing is the little children. They gathered one or two, then five or six, and then a dozen or more, or sometimes as many as 20, just following along and excited and chattering and singing and skipping. And I don't know why, but they seem to particularly gravitate to Miss Karen and Miss Dixie. That seems kind of natural. It happens around here too. But we just very much loved the children, and they followed us from village to village to village. When we left the village, they went with us, and we wondered, how far can they go? And we got almost to the highway, and then one of the young men that was accompanying us said, okay, time to come back. But it was like the Pied Piper, and those children were so loving. And they would, Karen had about two on each hand, and Dixie, as we walked through there, and even I was walking along, and I felt this little hand grasp mine. And I turned around, this little about nine-year-old boy. He just wanted to connect. And so we walked and enjoyed the children. We did a vacation Bible school. Didn't know what to expect. Karen directed that, and they told us, probably based on history and what's been going on, you can probably expect about 80 kids maybe. And it turned out, about best we can guess, about 250 kids. Kids everywhere. But oh, how exciting. And I say all that to say, we ask about the children's ministries program, and we're told they really don't have a children's ministries program. And they explain that in their culture, children just don't matter much. They take good care of them, they feed them, they clothe them, but they just don't really emphasize attention to children. They aren't really valued in their culture. And of course, I have no right to criticize. There's just started about 500 churches in the last 3 to 5 years, and you know, there's churches growing everywhere. But I thought, what a gold mine of ministry opportunity to these children. We find in the book of Matthew, the 19th chapter, a situation where Jesus was going from village to village, and he was the center of attention. And naturally, just like the African villages, when Jesus passed through, people followed him, and the children congregated. And there must have, and we know that children didn't really have a lot of value. They were kind of considered a non-entity until they got old enough to be productive. And so the children clamored, and the parents wanted Jesus to touch their children, to lay his hands on them, and to pray for them. The disciples meant well. I really believe the disciples meant well. So many people mean well by some of the things they say and they do, but the disciples were misguided. They thought, Jesus doesn't have time for these children. He's got important ministry to do. These children are just going to interrupt him. They're going to delay him. They're going to put a limit on the amount of ministry he can do. And so you're very, very familiar with the story in Matthew chapter 19. But let's read it anyway, beginning with verse 13. Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." And when he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. Placed his hands on them, one after the other after the other. You see, the children were not the only ones that wanted to connect. If we move through those villages, you know how it is in America. We have to be very, very careful how we approach children. Unfortunately, the culture has made it very important that we guard and safeguard our children. But we moved through that village, and I found myself wanting to hug them, just wanting to embrace them. And I was so thrilled when that little fellow just reached up and took my hand and wanted to walk with me and looked up with those beautiful eyes into my eyes. And so it just dawned on me that it wasn't just the children that wanted a connection. It was Jesus himself. And so he said, don't rebuke them. Don't send them away. Don't chastise them. Let the little children come to me. I want to speak to you for a few moments about the value of children in our society, but especially in our church today, the value of children. Psalms puts it in perspective. I guess probably David was the author of this particular Psalm, 127, where he says, "Children are an heritage from the Lord, offspring, a reward from Him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them." Can I paraphrase that just a little bit? I believe I can do it without any injustice to the intent of the Scripture or the integrity of the Scripture. Could I tell you that blessed is the church whose Sunday school classes is full of them? Children are an heritage from the Lord. We must value them. I pastored a church in a certain town. I'm not going to tell you where, but we emphasize children's ministry. That's all we've ever known to do. And we came here and we had a fantastic leader who was doing just a superb job with children's ministry. And we just tried to get behind it and help just as much as we can, encourage it. But in most of the churches I pastored, We have started various children's ministries and emphasized children's ministries. And so we had in this church, and we had a caravan going. We had a Bible quiz team. We had overnight parties for the kids. We had campouts for the kids. You know, anything you do with kids is special. We had a big baseball-type field out there beside the church, and a lot of the community children came to church. And so we thought, let's just pitch a bunch of tents and invite the kids to camp out with us. And many of them had never camped out before. I told you I'm not going to tell you where this church was, but I will tell you that it was infested with fire ants where we were. And so we went to bed and tried to get the kids settled down, and they settled down pretty well, but just every once in a while, from the tent beside me, I'd hear. And I'd hear some groans every once in a while. And enough that I recognized the voice, and I said, "Eric, what's the matter?" And he said, "Fire ants." I said, "Oh, no, Eric, we really don't have any space in any other of the tents. But if you want to go in and, you know, you can sleep on the couch in the parsonage. There's no fire ants in there." "Oh, no." And so it went on for another 30 minutes or so, and I kept hearing slap, slap, slap. And, "Eric, why don't you get up and go in the house?" He said, "Pastor Kevin, I ain't never slept in a tent before." And he was willing to lay there all night. Children, that's just anything you do for them. But in this particular church, you had two or three different groups of people. And I want to tell you, I'm not criticizing. They meant well. People mean well. But sometimes we need to think through how we deal with things. And so one night in a board meeting, we were discussing some needed improvements. The hallway needed painting, and, you know, some little work needed to be done. And one of those statements that I'll never, ever forget, when one of the leaders of the church on that board meeting said, "These kids are ruining our church." And my heart broke. Folks, we need to watch. We need to mind our attitudes. Children are an heritage from the Lord. And yes, yes, parents, we need to do a better job of raising our children and teaching our children and helping them to learn how to reverence God's house and so forth. But children are children are children are children. And the children they brought to Jesus were just as mischievous as the one that come in our doors. And they spoke out of turn sometimes. And they made noise sometimes. And sometimes they marred the surroundings. But Jesus said, "Do not hinder the children. Let the little children come to me." Never, 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 never let it into your heart and mind. These children are ruining our church. Let me tell you something, folks. If your church gets our church, I'll say our church gets to the place where we can't afford a little coat of paint to cover up where the children have soiled the surroundings, then we're in trouble anyway. We have no purpose for any direction. We need to make sure that the children are loved because, ladies and gentlemen, I've heard this statement for years and years, and it has never been truer in any environment or venue than it is right here on this property. The church, listen to me, hear me well, the church is always only one generation from extinction. When we fail to reproduce ourselves in our children, then we're gone. We're done. And so we need to learn the value of our children, and we need to learn to value our children. We need to make sure that we're examining regularly the priority of children in our midst. Don't forget, it's not always what you say, and you don't have to slap a kid or something to be offensive. Children are smart. They get smarter and smarter and smarter. I'm amazed. You know, I've got this smartphone that's high-tech, and, you know, I do all right with it, but then something happens and it don't act right, and, you know, my son don't have time for it, my brilliant wife don't have time for it, can't find anybody else. Nathan makes snide remarks if I ask him to help me, so I hand it to my three-year-old and say, "Can you fix this for me?" And most of the time he can, but children are brilliant, and so they can pick up on things. So, folks, remember in the life of church, of the church, attitude determines altitude. Can I say it again? Attitude determines altitude. And our kids will know whether they're loved. See, our kids will know whether they're valued. And they'll know whether they're tolerated. And they'll know that if they get on our nerves and they're just an inconvenience to us. And let me tell you, they have a lot of other options and opportunities if they don't find a loving nest, a warm nest of support right here. Attitude determines altitude. I pastored one family that were very active in the church. They had teenagers. They had a grown daughter. But they had a little six-year-old. And I say this with love and not as an insult at all. But if you ever have seen Dennis the Menace personified, it was Joshua. I mean, mischief, innocent mischief, just exuded from him. He was always into something. And so one Sunday morning, we had Holy Communion. And it's always been my policy that our children are welcome. We encourage our children's church to go over again with them what communion means, what it stands for, how we ought to examine our heart. I don't worry so much about the children being ready for communion as I do the adults sometimes. But children have always been welcome. Some haven't appreciated that, but children are always welcome. So we had communion, and the customary, there are trash receptacles at the doorway. Just drop your cup in there and so forth. And I was at the front of the church, and little Josh came around tugging at me like that. And I looked down, and he looked up with me with eyes that are just about this big around. And he was terrified. And he said, "Pastor Kevin, I spilt grape juice on the carpet." And if God ever inspired me that day, I think He inspired me. And I put my arm around Josh. I said, "You know what, Josh? You're a lot more important to us around here than clean carpet." And I saw that little man relax, almost melt in his tracks. But folks, is that true? Is that true? Children are more important for us than clean carpet or clean pews. They're more important to us than hallway walls that are not marred and dented and so forth. They're a lot more important to us than quiet solitude. The church I pastored was growing, and we hadn't yet finished out the other building. And man, we ran out of space. We had people, a Sunday school class meeting in our kitchen. We put partitions, bought these little office partitions. We partitioned off our foyer, had Sunday school classes going in our foyer. And then there was a balcony as such and a junk room. You know, every church got a junk room. But it is upstairs, and they told me we can never put people up there because we don't have two areas of egress. But I petitioned the city inspector, said, "Come out and talk to me." And he brought with him the fire marshal and another codes interpreter. And they stood with books open for a long time. And lo and behold, this area that was inaccessible, that was of no value for anything but storage, they figured out a way that we could finish it off and put at least up to 50 people up there at a time. You're talking about God working. So we finished it off, and we had a class of sixth grade. I think it was fifth and sixth graders. And we had read the statistics saying that for about 75% of our children between the end of the sixth grade, the fifth grade year, and the beginning of the junior high, we lost about 75% of our children. That's sixth graders. Folks, there's no place for them. They're too big for what we do with children. They're not big enough for what we do with teens. We've got to come up with a better solution. So we gave that space to our children. Now get the picture. This is a balcony. On the back of the sanctuary is a thin wall, not insulated. And then this is where adults meet, down here in the sanctuary. This is the holy sanctum. And this was a Wednesday night. A lot of times Sunday night, sometimes children's church activities on Sunday morning, and it was noisy. And we talked to our leaders. They try to keep it to a dull roar, you know, but some folks began to look up there and screw their face around in all kind of contortions. And they began to make comments. And so we adopted this motto in the church, a very simple motto. But the people bought into it. And the motto was, "That's not noise I'm hearing up there. That's music to my ears." The children, God help us to have noisy areas of our church. God help us to have to, you know, have you ever seen the miniseries Christie? Any of you? Well, good grief, you ought to. Here's the story. Here's the situation. Christie is a young, I'm not sure she's even graduated college, but she goes to this little Appalachian town as the school teacher in a one-room schoolhouse. And she's trying to deal with all grades and mischievous children, and sometimes more than mischievous, just mean and ornery. And she's trying to teach. And underneath the schoolhouse are the free-ranging pigs, where they, you know, they kind of go there because it's shady. And we find out later there's moonshine stored under there. So that's another reason the pigs congregated. But she's complaining to Miss Alice, which is kind of the mission director. And she said, "I did so though, and this and that, and this, and those pigs, I can hardly hear the children." She said, "The children can hardly hear me." And Miss Alice said, "There's a very simple solution to that. Just raise your voice." And so I learned to raise my voice. But folks, that noise, it's not noise, it's music. May God grant that we always have the clamor of children in our churches. We need to be careful, very careful, what we say. And I'm gonna expand this in a little bit in a minute, but there's an old children's song I learned way back with Miss Sharon Pelton's children's church. It goes like this: "Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. For the Father up above is looking down in love. Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say." Now, when that song's published, I'm going to get royalties, okay? But we need to be careful, little mouth. And we need to be careful, especially big mouths, what we say. I wish I could share with you the reports of that I get of people who have had their feelings hurt or became angry because some person, I guess we'll give them the benefit of saying they meant well, but they opened their mouth. And here's the thing about people that open their mouth unauthorized. They can very seldom, if ever, they can very seldom take it like they dish it out. And folks, you need to think through what you say. You know, people say, "I can't help it. I just say what I think." No, the problem is you don't think before you say. You know, you need to be very careful. You need to think through. What would I feel if that person said that to me? I know how some of you act. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Whether it's to adults, whether it's to a visitor, no matter who it is, whether it's to a church leader, be careful, because your words can be like an arrow, a dart that go right to the heart. You don't know what a person's going through. You don't know what's affecting them emotionally, and you don't know what little thing you say might be that pushes them right over the edge. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. There's a prayer I've prayed, and I really believe God's helped me, but He's still helping me. He still needs to help me. But I pray this prayer, and I want you to pray it with me, all right? It goes like this. Dear Lord, help me to keep my big mouth shut. Let's say it one more time with feeling, all right? Dear Lord, help me to keep my big mouth shut. Amen. Now, God answer that prayer, will you? But it's especially true with children. You know, and you say, "Pastor, you're saying we don't need to correct them, we don't need to teach them." Yeah, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And sometimes there's right people to do it and wrong people to do it. Sometimes you're just not authorized to say some of the things you say. All right? And so we need to be kind, loving, and compassionate. Because children are very, very sensitive. And they can pick up just like that when they're considered a nuisance. And they won't continue to make a nuisance of themselves. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Can I just change that a little bit? Be careful, big eyes, how you look. Sometimes it's not what you say, it's just the way you look. With annoyance on your face, like, man, I wish they'd get those kids out of here. No, we don't. We wish they'd get those kids in here. They are our future. They are the next generation. They are this generation. And I'm telling you what I mentioned a while ago. It's not that I hold that church up above any other. We did have made a lot of mistakes along the way. I'm telling you, sometimes we did things we thought would work and they just flopped. And sometimes it cost us big money. But we kept trying and trying and trying. And so we were able, we had this problem in the church. There's a major university right there in town. Very, very great, good reputation. But we couldn't get kids to stay. They were 3 miles from us across town, and we couldn't get kids involved. They'd visit us, and then they'd be gone. But we just kept on working every way we could. And as I said a while ago, some of those nursery kids grew to be children, and then those children grew to be teenagers. And then guess what? Some of those homegrown teenagers attended Tennessee Technological University. And now we have a presence on campus. We have missionaries on campus. And these kids began to come. Those college students began to come. And we provided ministry. But we didn't have to provide the ministry. Some of these kids that grew up through our teen department into our college, now they're the leaders. And today it's just keeping on and on and on. Folks, how do we impact Gordon State University? We raise kids and teenagers and college students that will be there and be missionaries. Can I speak to you if you're a teenager or college student? It's awful easy to go away and you'll see bigger churches and you'll see bigger programs and there'll be a lot of temptation to just forget your upbringing, forget your roots, and go off somewhere else. But some of you will love your church that you've raised in. Some of you will remember the folks that poured their life into you. Some of you will love your local church and you'll say, I don't want to go and float along in a church that's got all these pre-prepared ministries. I want to stay and be a leader. I want to stay and help develop my church into the church that it ought to be. We need you. We must have you. It's not a sin. It's not a shame to be loyal to your church. So love your church. Realize that people have invested heavily in you and reward them by faithful service and by picking up the torch and carrying it forward and making this a better church than it's ever been before. How should we approach our children? Jesus set the example. There's a word in that text that's translated differently in different translations, and to be honest, I'm not real sure that I'm satisfied yet with the translation. Jesus said, in the King James Version, he said, suffer the little children to come to me. It kind of, that gives me the connotation of, I don't like it, but I'll put up with it. You know, get a grip on yourself and look the other way or something. I don't like that word much. And the translators of some of the more modern translation must have not liked it either, because in the text we've read it said, let the little children come to me. But I think there's even a better word, and I think it captures the intent of what Jesus was saying. I don't think it does injustice to the original language. Maybe we should say, help the little children come to me. Help them. Don't just allow them. Don't just put up with them. Don't just step aside so they can come in and stay detached and distant. But let's get involved, and in every way we can, help these kids to develop. They got so many strikes against them. There's some of us that have said, well, the world hadn't changed that much. They hadn't invented any new sin or temptation. And that's true to an extent. But let me tell you something, folks. This is a different world these kids are being raised in. They need us. They need our love. They need our support. They need our prayers. They need our contributions to keep the ministries going. And they need a friend. So help them. in every way we can. And I appreciate so much this tremendous group of folks that have stood this week or this morning and said, we helped the children in Vacation Bible School this week. There'll be other opportunities. Remember, our attitude, particularly with our children, determines our altitude. And we want to go higher and higher for Jesus. Amen? Stand with me.